We all have our pet peeves. Our number one, like the things that, and I know that there's probably a lot of people listening to this right now thinking, JD, that doesn't a million things get you mad? Two things happened yesterday, or two things that have happened in the 24 hours that have just made me pretty furious. One that I'm going to talk about in the second half of the show, which is when sports executives that have failed repeatedly speak to the media, which really is speaking to the fans. Like, that's what that's for. Mark Shapiro didn't speak to the media yesterday because he has to answer to us. Nobody cares about us. Where's the greasy middlemen? Middle people. We're just there. Hey, what do you got to say? We got the equipment. We'll relay it over to you. We got the access. They vetted us to be here. We'll kick it over to you. When you're there and you're waiting to hear from a front office executive, who, by the way, hasn't spoken since March 21st. And there is a level of, I think, contempt, annoyance, weird self-satisfaction in some regards. And then it wraps up without really any answers whatsoever. You got to wonder why the media conference was called in the first place, what the goal of it was. There's an expensive PR crew that works on these things. These are smart guys. They've got an agenda when they do these kinds of things. They obviously picked this timing for a reason. And for the life of me, after watching it yesterday, I can't figure out why, but I do have some takeaways from it. And I'm going to discuss them in the second half of the show because I got Dan Shulman coming up here in a couple of minutes. He's down in Paris in a cab. Ooh la la. Ooh la la. It's très beau. And then my other annoyance happened this morning, which is I show up to work and my producer is sick. And he looks at me, he's like, hello, good morning. And I can see he's just like, he looks horrific. Like he looks like he got scraped off of the street. He looks like, don't talk.
Let me defend myself.
No, don't defend. You're coughing as you defend
myself. That's a laugh.
No. People go to the one thing, okay? I got a lot of things about the pandemic wrong. I really did. I thought that, honestly, I think my biggest worst takes exposed moment was that COVID was going to bring us all together because the globe had a common enemy, which was this pandemic. And that people would start to realize, you know what? We got locked in our homes. We got to appreciate being outside more. Got to stop being so mean to one another all the time. Got to stop being so volatile. Got to re-embrace our communities. Like, I got it all wrong. We went the opposite way on all of it. We were like, let's be meaner and let's stay inside more. But I really thought the one thing, the most obvious thing, the only thing that would be like inexcusable moving forward was that we would kill going to work sick culture. That you feel sick, you call in sick, and you don't go in because we all had to learn how diseases spread, right? How easy it is to catch a cold or a sickness or anything along those lines. That it's like, it takes a second, it takes one little flick of spit, and you, boom, you wipe somebody out. And here my producer is exposing himself like he was years inside and he sat there in his apartment with his girlfriend, no friends. Obviously, they didn't let any friends come over because he's already established that. He's never let a buddy crash on his couch and he just didn't learn a thing. This is my PSA. Don't go to work sick, all right? Stay home when you feel sick. Nobody thinks you're tough. Nobody thinks it's cool. Everybody is going to walk around you like you're a leper and a pariah. And I'm hurt. My feelings are hurt, Mike, that you would come in and you would put me at risk like this when there's so few weeks. It's Canadian summer, okay? It's Canadian summer. I got Europe in a couple of weeks. I'm getting out of here. I'm just get to the finish line. Get to Europe. Get me to my vacation. And you put me at risk?
I feel like you're gaslighting me into being sick.
How could you do this to me?
I don't feel sick.
Oh, yeah. I don't feel sick. I woke up with a frog in my throat.
I talk on Wednesday nights. I probably just lost my voice.
Yeah, no. That's not what that was. You probably lost your voice. You do trivia?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That makes more sense. I asked you yesterday, like, hey, we got this stuff. And you're like, oh, I'll get to it tomorrow. I was like, oh, he's working. He's doing trivia classic. I was like, no, this man has
gotta make the money.
This man has 84 jobs. We got Dan? No? Call him now? Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm going to talk to Dan Shulman in a second here. But, yeah, I'm going to try not to be too mad talking about the Shapiro thing because, again, I do understand that he has part of his job is not giving us every little piece of information. But yesterday, I don't think we got anything. And that's when you question something and you go, well, what was this for? What was the point of this? I know you're in a no-win situation. You can't go to a podium and all of a sudden give the Blue Jays 25 more wins, right? You can't go to the podium and all of a sudden transform the offense right now. You've got an offseason of work ahead of you. You've got a bunch of issues with this club. But I don't think it's outrageous that at this point there's a little bit of transparency, especially when transparency, and I know it was meant to be organizationally, but it was a goal for this front office last offseason. That they entered a year with high expectation despite fans doubting a lot of it. And so when your expectation is out of whack, but the fan base's expectation is in line with what happened, what does that say about your group and your process and where you guys are at right now? Because to me, it shows a pretty severe flaw. So when the media shows up, again, the arm of the fans, as much as fans cry about how much they hate media at times, there's a certain sect that do it all the time. That's your local representative. You don't get to be down there talking to Shapiro. Maybe you should. Maybe some of you should get to field more questions towards Mark Shapiro. But the media is down there and they're asking the questions that they think that you want to know and kind of got stonewalled yesterday. Not a lot of information. Not a lot of... Well, I would say very little transparency. I would say, yet again, a really difficult tone, which I go back and forth on how much it matters. But when you have a problem, don't you want to feel like the person that could potentially provide a solution is going to speak to you in a way where there is a genuine understanding that the frustration goes beyond, we know we need to win, like beyond platitudes. When you have a real problem and you go to somebody with it and they can impact change, do you want a platitude or do you want something that feels real? I don't know which one I want. Anyways, we'll do that in a bit. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll break down the Shapiro interview and this press conference because I'm guessing a lot of you actually missed the audio.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we're waiting on Dan. We're trying to get him from Paris. We might have to just move on because I got to start getting into this Shapiro stuff. I mentioned it off the top of the show. God, there's nothing worse than this. We're doing a live show and you're trying so hard to save a segment where you got to build it all together and then you got to try to split the segment and try to figure this thing out on the fly, but that's what we're going to do. Okay, so I mentioned it. Yesterday, Mark Shapiro spoke to the media, which by all intents and purposes is you, the fans. This is a guy who has not spoken to the media since March 21st. Okay? It's March 21st, and yes, they've trotted Ross Atkins out there, and yes, he is an arm of this team, but as the president in modern-day sports, you understand that this is no longer just a job where you're handling the money. This isn't just a money job. This is, you know, we're handling sports operations and business operations. There's not moves that Ross Atkins is making. There's not a direction that this team is taking without Mark Shapiro having a strong hand in it. And there's a couple things that I do think Mark has really accomplished. Like, truly, and I think that they've been brought up ad nauseum, which is he's gotten ownership to open up the purse strings in an incredibly meaningful way. This payroll is just top 10 in baseball year over year. And again, I've mentioned this before, but if you look at percentages of gate revenue, like stadium revenue, and what gets actually put back into the baseball team, this group is unparalleled in all of baseball. And so... like that part of the job has been a smashing success for Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. Like there's absolutely no question about it. The other thing is that they got the stadium renovated in a way that excites fans. And you really can't diminish that, because so much of the experience is that it's supposed to be an entertainment product. I bring this up all the time. It's supposed to be fun to want to watch the Toronto Blue Jays. That's supposed to be on TV. And that's supposed to be when you go down to the ballpark and spend your hard-earned dollars and take in an experience. And for years and years and years, that place felt like doom and gloom. It did. It was dark in the concourses. It was completely bereft of social places. Like, I went to a million games during 2015, 2016. I know a lot of you did. Where did you meet? Where did you congregate to have another fan there? Like, what was the move? Where did you go? I know where I went, to the top of my aisle, and you hope that somebody came and met you there. You hope that your friend would stand there for a minute, and that was pretty much it. You could meet in the flight deck, but it would be rammed on a popular day, and it would be difficult to end up getting seats there. So the ballpark renovations were great. All right, we've gotten the good stuff out of the way. Since then, this was a team that was supposed to be winning a World Series. This was supposed to be a competitive window. This was a front office that, when they arrived in town, had conversations with the former general manager of the team about how they thought the farm system was in dire straits, and they were upset with how much was mortgaged in order to compete in 2015. The last time they won a playoff game was in 2016, when they basically just inherited the team that was left over to them. So you sit here today with a farm system that is not the envy of baseball, which to Baseball America ranks, I believe, 26th. The MLB Pipeline, a very similar number. A team that has a very juiced up payroll. A team that was really disappointing last year. And you know who said it was really disappointing last year? Mark Shapiro. Here's a quote that he had from his exit press conference last year. Quote, "This season was a grind. It was not easy. It was extremely frustrating, and it was challenging. We still won 89 games, but I've been in the game 32 years, and I can't remember a season that felt like it was more of an effort," end quote. That was Mark Shapiro last offseason, before the offseason started, okay? That was for an 89-win team that finished 14th in runs, viewed as a massive disappointment, 14th in runs. Last year, we were thinking, boy, it's really frustrating watching this offense. This year, by the way, this year, they are 27th in home runs, 20th in OPS, 23rd in runs, 23rd in runs. They've had a pretty significant drop-off. Anyways, this was Mark Shapiro when talking about, this year's team.
Having a team fall so short of your projections and how you thought it would perform, do you feel like you need to adjust the way you project going forward or the way you construct rosters?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this is, in the nine seasons I've been through, this is the biggest disconnect from expectations. It doesn't mean we haven't had, difficult endings to seasons. It doesn't mean we haven't had seasons where we knew we were going to have a challenge competing, but this has been by far the biggest disconnect from our expectations and the biggest disappointment. So we need to learn. We need to get better from it. I think the trade deadline was the start of that. Making sure we get better from challenges, adversity, and disappointment. But that has to happen in the way we put the team together for next year, for sure.
Okay. Again, it's been 9 years. I understand we all learn on the job. I've been on this job for a decade now, and I learn new things every day. So I'm certainly not trying to pretend like just because you've done a job for a while doesn't mean you can't continue to get better at it. You have to evolve. You have to adapt. You have to continue to get better. So that is that's an automatic prerequisite for Mark Shapiro. What drives me crazy is when he talks about the disconnect and their biggest disappointment. Yes, I guess this is a bigger disconnect. You did finish 14th in runs last year. You finished 14th. And then you went into an offseason, and yeah, you tried to get Shohei Ohtani, and that would have been great, right? You guys pay attention to Shohei Ohtani in Los Angeles Dodgers. He's pretty incredible. You know who else is pretty incredible over there who continues to swat home runs? Is Teoscar Hernandez, by the way. He's hitting right behind him right now, and he's hitting home runs every second night. He's been an animal behind the dish. But I don't understand. So you called last year, you called last season a grind, that it wasn't easy, that it never felt like more of an effort. And then you went into the offseason and you brought in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa to replace Matt Chapman, and you brought in Justin Turner at 39 years old to replace Brandon Belt, who was actually one of your most successful hitters last year. You brought back Kevin Kiermaier at a high number for what he was actually going to provide you, especially given that it was going to diminish some of the positional value of Dalton Varsho, who every night is doing something spectacular out in the outfield. Again, a guy who is, I think at this point, pretty unquestionably, I'm not even sure who the case would be that is better than Dalton Varsho in the outfield. Like the reads that he makes, the timing that he has in the outfield, he is a bona fide, has to be, center fielder. And you kicked him out to left again to bring back Kevin Kiermaier, despite him having a highly positive, he had a pretty incredible season at the dish last year. For you to think that he was going to be and remain above his career numbers is a lot. So for a team that was 14th in runs, that struggled to drive in runs all season long, the offseason solutions were not to get aggressive in a trade and bring in a bat, not to get aggressive for a guy like Teoscar Hernandez, who, I don't know, maybe you broke the relationship with, maybe you were too stubborn on. Like, people always say, oh, you can't say that you lost a trade anymore when the guy's with a different organization because you could have signed him as a free agent. It's like, yeah, that, to me, this almost makes it worse with Teoscar Hernandez at times. Like, this guy was like a heart and soul of your order. I think we kind of learned that. You went into this offseason, and that's what you did. You addressed it with some pretty unexciting bats. And then this year, you know, like I said, the offense hasn't had this big positive regression. And also, this isn't a team that's been nailed by the injury bug. Like, Bo Bichette has been on the DIL for the last month. Absolutely, he has. He was one of the worst. I think he was the worst qualified hitter in all of baseball before he hit the injury report. He was awful. And you could say, like, hey, maybe it's because of the injury. Yeah, sure. One guy's going to take you from 14th to 23rd? Or do you think that you probably should have had a little bit more depth at that position, that you probably shouldn't have been leaning on the likes of Ernie Clements and Davis Schneiders to be your offense in a season where you were trying to take a step up from 89 wins and trying to compete with one of the highest payrolls in all of baseball? Anyways, here's the next part, which is basically, you know, how Mark introduced the media conference and started to continue to explain like what happened with this season and why there's such a huge disconnect between what the expectation was, which again, assuming is a World Series champion, like a supposed to be a team that's at the top of the division, a team that's supposed to be right there knocking on the door, that you're supposed to go to the Rogers Center every night and believe that this team might end up winning a championship this year, to where they are currently right now. So here's clip number one.
Obviously, disappointing season on the field. Why do you think that this team fell short of expectations?
Well, I mean, it's not a mystery why we fell short of expectations. The bullpen's been a challenge for us all season long. Significant injuries to the three guys we expected to anchor the back end, and then the backfill just wasn't there. So the bullpen's been an Achilles for us all year. And then there were a number of guys in the lineup we projected to have, you know, carrying levels of performance. It didn't happen. I think the greater focus for us is what can we learn from that? What role did we play in that? How we can construct a team that's better next year. So, there's no doubt it's bitterly disappointing.
Okay, so the bullpen is the Achilles heel. Starting with the bullpen. And it was just because of these injuries. One, you lost Jimmy Garcia for a couple of weeks when the season was already over. So one of the three guys, one of the three major injuries, like I think that's what he's alluding to. No, no. Two is one of those guys is Chad Green, who you signed because you were able to sign him. And at the rate that he was paid, because he was coming off of an injury. And yeah, that happens. Like, you know, sometimes you swing and miss and you get nothing on those guys like they did with Ken Giles. The guy who was hurt when you got him being hurt, you probably have to have a little bit more of a backup plan. Also, like when you say the three guys that are supposed to anchor the back of your bullpen, that kind of means that you don't think Eric Swanson was supposed to be one of those three guys who, by the way, Eric Swanson, you traded for him the Teoscar Hernandez guy with all the runs, as we mentioned before. So, okay, fine. Yeah, it's the bullpen. It was just because of injuries? That doesn't really make sense. You lost your closer. Yep, you did. That one stings. That absolutely stings. But if we're starting with, that's why the Blue Jays have been losing this season, or, that's the Achilles heel of this group. No, the Achilles heel of this group, the Jays are 27th in home runs. I said this already, but they're 20th in OPS going into last night. 20th. That's not a playoff team unless you have brilliant, 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 brilliant starting pitching, right? Seattle Mariners level starting pitching right now, where you go George Kirby, Gilbert, Luis Castillo. You're running these guys out there, and, the Jays, to their credit, again, Shapiro and Atkins' credit, because these guys really seem to want credit for stuff that they have done well. I will give it to them. Here you go. You've done a great job at identifying starting pitching. The Robbie Ray trade was outrageously good. How you got a guy off the scrap heap, essentially, that you turn into a Cy Young winner. Then you walked away from the table at the right time, and you handed that money to Kevin Gausman, who was also brilliant for you. You went and got Yusei Kikuchi that looked like a disaster. He was outrageously good. You haven't developed any starting pitching whatsoever. But when it comes to signing free agent starting pitching, there's a lot of reason to believe in the Toronto Blue Jays. Even Chris Bassitt, who I thought was a good signing, turned out to be way better than I had expected him to be. And especially when you consider his age and the innings that he had put on himself the year before, that you're still getting this from Chris Bassitt is awesome. So kudos to them for that. But you're 19th in starting pitching war on Fangraphs. 19th. So you're 20th in OPS and 19th in starting pitching. I don't think it's just a bullpen issue. And I know he did mention that a couple of guys didn't meet expectations at the dish. You had a team that last year was 14th. And you didn't add anybody of major consequence. Why were we supposed to believe that it was going to be monumentally different? The positive regression theory that we went into this season with is nuts to me looking back, because there's nobody that's that crazy outside their career norms except for George Springer. But again, you probably should have accounted for the fact that he's an aging player, that his signs of regression were probably going to be a little bit more meaningful, that it was probably going to be a little bit more unlikely that he bounced back and was awesome this year versus what? The positive regression of Alejandro Kirk, which is actually happening right now. So shout out to Kirky, who's been playing better as of late. I just this whole idea that it's this big sneak up or big surprise. This is the bullpen. You lost Jordan Hicks. You went out and you said, we need Jordan Hicks last year at the deadline. We need more swing and miss. You lost him. Who was he replaced with? Nate Pearson? The bullpen got worse. You didn't add to it. The starting pitching, you started the year with Bowden Francis, who pitched well yesterday. Good job for Bowden Francis. He can have his moments, and you started the year with him as your starting pitcher, as a guy that was going to give you starts. You were banking on Alek Manoah to come back and be something like his regular self when there hadn't really been any indication for that in a while. And again, he was coming off of an injury. And then after that, who was the starting pitcher? What depth had your organization created? The bullpen is not the major issue with this team. If the bullpen was the major issue with this team, if it was the Achilles heel of this team and they were blowing leads every single night, I think that you guys probably would have been able to address that a little earlier in the season, get something done and salvage this year. The Blue Jays are not what they were in 2021 when it was just painful, awesome team, score a ton of runs, in it every single night, but can't get to the ninth inning because they've just got nobody back there. They didn't address the bullpen because the team also wasn't lining up with it. So I just thought that answer was a little disingenuous and quite frankly, a little annoying. Again, when you have a problem, and I don't understand why these front offices do this. We're all supposed to do this in our day-to-day lives. And there's nobody like a front office that wants to preach accountability more than a front office. And yet when it comes to accountability time, it's the bullpen was our Achilles heel. That's what you're going to lead with? Okay, fine, whatever. Anyways, let's play clip two.
What have you learned from that in terms of things that we've seen that will be different next year?
Continue to learn. I mean, the focus of my conversations with Ross has been around roster construction, handedness, balancing offense and defense. But it's a work in progress. I think there's still a good portion of the season left. So to make final conclusions now would would be premature, and that's more for Ross to discuss at the end of the season than me to provide details on. But those are conversations we're having now. Most importantly, just making sure, that we don't let a crisis go to waste. And I think, again, the deadline set the tone for that, and we need to make sure we get better.
What was that? Honestly, you all just heard that. You're listening to the show. They asked, what have you learned? That was the question. Because this is a guy that's constantly talking about learning, right? Like, that's what we said. It's like every media conference, he's like, we're learning and we're continuing to learn. And they're 9 years into the learning. And again, like I mentioned before, don't stop learning. That's great. But the question was, are you still learning? It was, what have you learned? And he said right away, continue to learn. What? What? Then he goes on to say that they're having conversations about handedness and, like, okay, it's good. It's really not insightful whatsoever. And that Ross will speak on this later because you can't draw any conclusions from this year. Again, you're not just drawing from this year. You're drawing from last year, too. This is 2 years in a row. And yes, you won 89 games, and yes, you got into the postseason, but the American League was much weaker when you won the 89 games. It was. Your division did not look nearly as competitive. If you're going to be competing in 2025, which they did again reiterate yesterday, which is fine. You know, you see some of these people, you see where Vladdy's at in his career, and you go, come on, like, be great. Why not? Why not them? There's way more spots up for grabs now. Can't be, you can make it. You can make a wild card. Look at the battle the Mariners and the Astros are in right now. But your division is still pretty tough. There's three teams in it that are like unquestionably ahead of you and are going to start next year ahead of you. And so what have you learned? I don't think that that's like too vague. I don't think that that's an unfair question. Again, this is now 2 years in a row where you've really missed expectations. And it's basically, I don't know how you guys count 2016, but for me, I've always looked at 2016 as a Anthopoulos team, not as a Shapiro Atkins team. So realistically, to me anyway, and maybe that's unfair, whatever, I've never viewed them as a group that has put together a playoff win. They've made some appearances. It's great. They've never won a game, never won a playoff game. What have you learned? You talk about learning all the time. Surely there's something that you can share, and you share that answer. I just, again, what was yesterday for? That's the theme of this thing. What was yesterday for if you're just going to come out there and say those things? Is it because it was mandatory? Like, I don't think it was. I don't, not as far as I'm aware. So what was the point? Why is it when a veteran reporter asks you, what have you learned, that you can't provide any answer of substance, and then just that you still have, it's too premature? Like, then, well, why are you speaking today then? Why did you choose today if you can't draw any conclusions from a season that's already lost? Like, you can't draw conclusions from, again, you're out of it. It's over. If the season's over for you, how are you not able to draw some conclusions? And then it's the old, don't worry, we'll kick it over to Ross. He's going to answer things in the offseason. All right, play the next clip.
Coming off of last year, just talking to you and Ross, seemed like the belief was offensively as a bit of an outlier year. Because last year, Ross called it a blip. This year, things have taken a step backwards offensively. So is it safe to say it's no longer an outlier?
Clearly.
What do you think you guys can do to address that?
I think that's what I talked about in roster construction. It's what we're working on right now, and it's what Ross will spend more time describing. But we have some ideas and thoughts have to do with the delineation between, we've done a good job identifying talent individually. We have not done as good a job collectively placing that talent and the roster together to win. So it's that connection, Arden, between identification of talent, where I think we actually have done a pretty good job individually, but they haven't come together to produce the numbers that we would expect from a championship offense.
That's the wildest answer of the entire media conference, by the way. We've done a good job at collecting offense individually, or we've done a good job at collecting talent individually. Care to provide some examples of this? Like, what? Who are the super talented guys in the roster? Again, you inherited Vladimir Guerrero Jr., your MVP, the guy that looks amazing. Who have you collected? Like, what am I missing here? I watch this team every night. What's the talent that they're... Also, the whole saying about baseball is it's an individual sport masquerading as a team sport. Hard to play like the Houston Rockets angle here of, you know, Daryl Morey saying that you didn't take chemistry into account amongst the players. Oh, well, you know, we're surprised that James Harden and Russell Westbrook didn't really work out because we didn't take into account this amount of the share. We didn't know that Shaq and Kobe weren't going to get along for the first couple of seasons. We didn't know that the locker room dynamic would be, what? This is baseball. Individual sport, masquerading as a team sport. If you have a great collection of talent, it should coalesce as a group. Who are the people that you guys have identified? Like, I'm at a loss with this. Again, one of the worst farm systems in all of baseball. Great job identifying free agent starting pitching. No doubt about it. Absolutely no question about it. And in some trades. I don't know. I actually think that we're kind of at the precipice of not wondering if the Jays won the Barrios trade or not. But, like, it's I would say, becoming a little bit more of a debate considering, yeah, the way he's pitched this season. And if you look at the entire body of work, which is kind of closer to actually what his entire career has been. But either way, it's just like, it's not a slam dunk one. But the pitching has been great. It really has been. And they've won a lot of games. They've won a lot of regular season games. And they do deserve credit for that. But just, I don't get why in a lost season, when you're holding a media conference, you snap back at the reporter who asked the question and say that you answered it earlier. Like, he's not stupid. He knows you didn't answer that question earlier. That's why he asked it. Everyone wants to know those questions. Like, if it's not an aberration, what is going to change? Because you guys are asking for continuity and you're asking for the trust of the public and the Blue Jays faithful. Time and time again, you're willing to come to the table and ask for it. But then you can't tell anybody why you deserve it? Like, what you're learning? What adjustments you want to make? What, like, you don't have to throw anybody under the bus. I never expected him to show up yesterday and go, Ross Atkins is going to be fired. Like, everyone fixated on the whole, like, he believes in continuity thing. It's like, yeah, okay. He's not going to fire Ross Atkins in the middle of the end of the summer. If there's an off-season change, which, by the way, Atkins is a longer contract than Shapiro does, which I actually think is kind of an interesting wrinkle in all this. But either way, I'm not a fool. Like, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. But I'm not a fool to believe, like, this guy was going to come out here and, again, provide all the answers and all the details and, you know, break everything down and just say, hey, you want to look through my phone? Like, no. Obviously, it wasn't going to be like that. But to snap back at that question, say, oh, I answered it earlier. No, you didn't. And then to provide that answer where you're saying you've done a good job at identifying individual talent. Like, who are they? Because you traded for an incredibly great defensive outfielder, which is good. I like Varsho, and I think the trade looks better, even though, again, he hits 200 and sub 700 OPS. And when you did make that trade, you started him as a cleanup hitter, which means that you didn't just think you were getting a good defensive outfielder. I think that's pretty clear, even if he has exceeded your expectations as an outfielder. Like, where's the other collection of talent? Are you referring to, you know, Spencer Horowitz and Ernie Clement? Like, what, who are these people? Are you referring to Justin Turner, who you traded away? I don't get it. Good job individually. Not a good job of them coming together. Okay, next clip.
Rick, you mentioned the value, how you value stability have over the course of your career. How do you?
Not just me. I mean, you look at the best-in-class organizations and, you know, sports teams. There are sports teams that weather, you know, pressure and weather, you know, challenges and stick with people and allow them to make adjustments.
For sure. But in this instance, as you're making decisions for this organization, how do you weigh when stability makes sense versus stability having had an extended period of time and maybe change needed to shift things in a different direction?
If you're certain you can be better, you make a change.
How do you assess that?
I'm not going to go through that with you now. It's a personal and a process I would go through.
Again, it's personal. That's like, when they asked LeBron James about what his favorite scene in The Godfather is, and he's like, hey, man, every movie's 9 hours long. What do you want me to say? Or they asked Donald Trump what his favorite verse in the Bible is, and he's like, it's private. And you're like, wait, the Book of Worship that that is shared around the globe, the world's most, that's the personal. Okay, again, what is personal about that answer? Like, I'm at a loss for that. Like, that's a great move to pull. And this is some good movery in this answer. This is a good movery answer. Because one, you get to play it's personal, as though, like, you know, why are you off sick from work today? It's personal. Okay, you get one of those. You get a couple of those. I think I missed work for 2 weeks. Like, I want to know more than it's personal. So if you want 9 years of continuity, you want a decade at the helm, I don't know. What? When does continuity stop being advantage? That seems like a pretty reasonable question, something that could get answered by someone who's using that as the thesis of their argument. They're going like, hey, should I ask him? What? You guys have had a lot of time. A lot of continuity. And he interrupts him and he goes like, the best part of this is, or sorry, the organizations see it through. Yeah, like obviously every organization has to see through some difficult times. Not every single team wins World Series after World Series after World Series. It's not that binary. But how many front offices out there now have 9 seasons where they haven't, you know, or let's put 8, where they, you know, that have put an organization in a place like this and then brought it back. And that have won, like, so you just, the argument here is that continuity is for the best. You know why, too? The organizations that win, they don't want to break them up. Like, yeah, there's a reason why the Spurs have great continuity. You know why? They won lots of championships. They said, R.C. Buford, winner many times over. Found Manu Ginobili, found Tony Parker. Keep. Good idea. Strong idea, in fact. You find winners, you want to keep the winners. I want to know all the examples of these organizations that have lost for nearly a decade, that have kept the front offices intact, and then it turned out to be a stroke of genius. I'm guessing that there's far more in the didn't work out column than there is in the did work out column. Like, these are such vague things. Like, when are we supposed to know? So everyone goes continuity, continuity, continuity. And I agree. I think it's the same thing. Man, like any job you do, like you having consistency is going to allow you to eventually find out who you are. You got a good boss. He's still around. You got, you know, good people around you, they stick with you for a while. I can speak to it from like a show standpoint. It's awesome having continuity. It really is. So I understand why he would want it. But at some point, when does the rubber meet the road? This is, what was the point of this media conference? Why did I have the bowl, Bart? Why did I have the bowl? I can't for the life of me gather what yesterday was all about. And that's why I'm annoyed. I didn't want all the answers, to reiterate this. I know I want to go in circles here. I didn't want all the answers. I didn't want the keys to the kingdom. I didn't want to look through Mark Shapiro's phone. But I think that for a guy that's the president of the organization, that's been given this much wiggle room financially, that had this much expectation from fans, like, right? Isn't that supposed to be the thing? Great expectation comes great responsibility. You get tons of expectations. You had all the money, you had all the prospects. You inherited Vladimir Guerrero Jr., got Bo Bichette. You had all the purse strings open to you in a beautiful competitive window where the Yankees were down and the Orioles were rebuilding and the Red Sox were down. You were basically competing a little while against the just Tampa Bay Rays, a team that you were supposed to basically be able to outperform in every single way because you have infinitely more resources. And this time around, you had a farm system. So now you're in a place where the farm system is bad, where the team's offense, that was the point of criticism a year ago, has gotten much worse. The starting pitching has predictably gotten worse because guys have aged and you've never been able to backfill it with prospects, which again was supposed to be a big marker of what this front office is. And your bullpen fell apart. And this year you will not be making the playoffs. And yep, you made the playoffs last year. You got in with 89 wins. It was awesome. It was great. You got in 2022. Got in during a COVID season that was kind of not really playoffs. I would think we would all agree that that was not getting to play the Rays there. Was that? It's like, okay, it's not that much. It's really not that much that you've accomplished. You never won the division. Like, this wasn't some massive track records of success that these guys were walking from that elicited the benefit of the doubt. At some point, what does accountability mean then? Because they say they're learning, they say there's accountability, and then yet when you get these like little opportunities to do so, there's nothing. It's basically crickets. It's those answers that I just played for you. So I don't know how you could hear that stuff as a fan and not be frustrated. I don't know how you could hear that stuff as a fan and not feel trapped and not go like, what does it matter then? What does it matter then? If the losing continues and a team that's difficult to watch continues to be this way, and then the answers that we're given are like, we're still learning. It's like, yeah, kind of want you to at some point figure some of this out. And I think if you're not going to figure it out, you probably at least owe the people a bit of an explanation as to why. Anyway, let's do what we missed. Mike Jose, who came into work despite one foot in the grave this morning.
Stop.
What do you got?
Stop. Okay, let's shake it up here from baseball. Let's go to some fantasy. I know you're a commissioner, so I wanted to get your opinions on this because this was grinding my gears. So last week I went to a movie. Went to the bar after, but my phone died.
You do a lot of like movies and going to the bar and like, you know, not a lot of working, I've noticed. But yeah, go on. Yeah, I just like a lot of, you got a like really active social life. No wonder you're sick. Like all your stories begin with, last night I was in the bar. I'm like, okay, yeah, nice. Hey, good job though. The clips were lined up. You nailed them. Now those are screwed up.
Hey,
so
you
can spend all
the work.
Yeah.
I do the work.
You do the work. You get the work done. You work hard, play hard. I like that about you. Okay, so go on.
Okay, so my phone died and I wake up in the morning and I just have a ton of text messages and like messages. So it turns out my commissioner of our fantasy league changed a bunch of rules. He just did it on his own. He just wanted to. He thought he knew what was best for everybody.
Oh, wow. He's a dictator. Okay,
he's a little bit of a dictator.
Yeah, no, that's outrageous. You can't have that. A couple things here. One is, yes, I'm a commissioner of a league that has been going on since I was in second year university. So it's got a lot of history. And I have had moments as a commissioner. I, like Mark Shapiro, have learned, okay? And I continue to learn. And I, over my time, one thing that I did learn is, you can never pull the, like, this is best for the league thing. You already are in a position of power, of influence as the commissioner, as someone who's supposed to be, like, thinking about these things more. I got to tell you, I'm kind of like, I hate admitting this, but I'm almost at the point as the commissioner, though, where I need to find my Adam Silver in this league. Like, I need someone to take over, because I'm slipping. Like, I will admit that my skills are slipping, but there were points in time where I did have very strong opinions about things that needed to happen in the league. Like, one of our biggest and most contentious ones was at the very beginning, at the very beginning, we had a snake draft. And the first year that we had to pivot to the auction draft, which was actually pretty early on, you as a commissioner kind of had to be, like, pretty forceful about it because people fear change. So you got to, like, kind of get your arguments prepped. You got to have the people in line. You got to get the votes. You got to whip up the votes like you're a senator, right? Like, try to pass a bill. That's how being a commissioner works. If you try to do things unilaterally, you kill the passion for the league. You kill the interest in the league. And I've been in ones like that before where the commissioner just tries to make rules. Then all of a sudden you're like, wait, what happened with the scoring this year? Wait, we're doing two quarterbacks without any discussion? And those are leagues that I kind of check out on, and they feel like almost, I don't want to say a cash grab because it's like you're not winning much if you're a commissioner, but like a weird, it's just like only about the commissioner and it's like their league and you go, okay, cool. I don't want to play with you anymore. There's a million people who want to play fantasy football. There's a million fantasy football leagues. You shouldn't be like hyper dependent on staying in the one. No, the only way fantasy leagues survive is if there's a strong hand at the top that provides the ideas, but also listens to the people in the fantasy league and enacts the rules and changes that the league sees fit as needing. Like, you have to put things to a vote. You can't have massive changes in your scoring system because one person, like, I'm assuming that that's what it is. It's like format and scoring changes. Yeah. It's not like, you can't change the schedule, like, on people. You can't change the rules to the draft. You can't, like, you have to consult everybody in the league. That's the only way that it works. So, yeah, no, if you want it to be that way, just join a league with strangers. Like, I don't, yeah, that sucks. That's awful. No, you can't have that. That's horrible commissioner's work. As a fellow commissioner, I'm ashamed of that commissioner's actions.
Some of the rules were, if you just put it to a vote, everyone would agree on. Like, it was normal stuff.
You're weakening your argument, though.
I know. Okay, well, he took away a bench spot, which is just odd.
Okay.
He added Fab, which is fine. People wanted Fab.
Okay.
That's okay. He added a flex spot.
Like free agent auction budget?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's and what we
were all—we were all going to vote for that. I think that was like a.
You still got to vote.
He just put it in.
You still got to vote. You still got
to
vote.
He added. He changed it from half PPR to full PPR.
No, that's too big of a change for
it's
you
massive.
To just. Yeah, that's a massive change. That's a massive change. No, you gotta have the people involved. You gotta have your league involved. You gotta have your people involved. There's just no other way about it. I gotta admit this though. Like, so I just reactivated my league because it's a keeper league, and I'm trying to get everybody in line and. Again, I'm getting out of here for a couple of weeks. In a couple of weeks, I've got all the, like, you know, packed end of summer activities that I've got here left in the city before I go. So maybe it's just been that, but I've never had a football season like this before. I've never had a football season where it's like there's preseason games tonight, and it just eluded me. Normally, I'm like the dead of summer. I'm just getting way more into football, and I haven't been that into the Olympics because. I'm not a big Olympics guy. I've mentioned this before. I just think that at this point, some of the stuff, the spending on these games, and then the inability to turn some of the structures into actual things that benefit the public has always sort of bothered me. I'm sorry, but it does.
I agree with Riccio from last week, though. I think it's we spent all of our fandom on that Canada in the Copa.
No, I've always been not. Maybe that's for some, but no, man. Some of it was that I was like really jacked up for Canada basketball, and then you know that ends up being the biggest disappointment in the entire Olympics. But yeah, no, I'm not someone that will sit around and watch diving. I'm not someone who will sit around and you know watch most of these events. There's a few that I like really do enjoy if I happen to catch it, but I'll never look into like when they are on the schedule. Like I love watching volleyball. I like watching wrestling. I like the swimming events when you catch them. Obviously, I like the running events. But yeah, that's kind of it. Like everything else is kind of, oh, are we good at it? Oh, I guess I'll watch our final, but not watching the heats, the leading up to it. I'm just not a huge Olympics guy. Anyway, I've never been this disconnected from football, from fantasy football, but this week, this will be, I'm throwing myself back in, okay? I'm getting caught up with training camps. I'm getting caught up with storylines. I've already been dabbling, you know? Like, I've been dabbling a little bit. Like, I've been touching in with a couple stories that I was interested in. I'm like, you know, what's going on with Bryce Young this year? Oh, he's not playing the first preseason game? Okay, interesting. Don't you think he should get all the reps? And then there's murmurs that his offensive line still isn't good. And I'm like, ooh, that's kind of ugly, right? I'm checking in. I'm lurking. Following the Ayuk thing. Like,
yeah.
Saw they turned down all the Patriots money. I think that Ayuk is quite a strange guy right now where it's like he doesn't have crazy bananas video games numbers and yet he wants like that contract but also to be on a winner. I'm like, okay. I'm watching. I'm seeing Russell Wilson. He's already hurt and maybe losing the job. Justin Fields and his teammates are raving about him already. And it's like, damn, Russell Wilson's career might go the way that it started, which is the big free agent signing. The name. Gets jumped by the younger, more athletic guy. Might close full circle. So, like, I'm not completely out, but I need to get in. I need to get fully immersed. I love NFL football. I'm going to Argos again Friday, so I'm, you know, I got my CFL still on. But yeah, I got to get more into NFL this weekend. But yeah, no, you got to tell. I don't even know what you do. I think that you can actually like unseat that dictator of a commissioner. The only problem is that if you unseat the dictator commissioner, someone else has to. Step in and actually do that role. And I can tell you as a commissioner, you think it's cool at the very beginning. And then by year five, you're like, this is the worst idea I ever had. Anyway, subscribe to the podcast. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Reach out anytime. Like I said, I always like it when people weigh in on the show and especially when it's a big topic day, like this one with the Shapiro stuff. At JD Bunkus, shoot me a DM anytime and then follow the podcast. It really helps it out, especially when you leave 5 stars. We'll see you tomorrow.